This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Well, Well, Well. Sex, health, and well-being in our LGBTI communities.
Presented by Joy sponsor VAC, the Victorian AIDS Council.
Good evening and welcome to Well, 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 once again brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council here on Joy 94.9. My name's Tex and I'm joined by Jesse tonight working the panel and also asking a few questions as well. G'day, Jesse, how are you?
I'm good, Tex. How are you?
I'm really good. Great to be working with you, doll.
I know. It's been a while, hasn't it?
Now, tonight on our show, Jesse, we've got a couple of colleagues coming in from our office at the Victorian AIDS Council.
I know. I'm super excited to talk to them.
Indeed. Mark and Garth are coming in and they're from our alcohol and other drug services team. And we're going to be talking about the Rewired program and we'll unwind what Rewired is all about. But basically, it's for men affected by crystal methamphetamine. And we're going to find out how interested men can access the group. So it's going to be a hip hop and happening show. We've got some lovely music coming up through the show and I thought we'd start off with a great piece of music. This is Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. This is Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9 and tonight we're joined by our colleagues Garth and Mark from the VAC Alcohol and Other Drugs Services team. Good evening, Mark and Garth. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having us. It's great to be here.
Good evening, Garth. Good evening, Jess.
Now, tonight we're going to be discussing recreational or, if you like, illicit drugs. Mm-hmm. Here at Joy and at VAC, we don't condone the use of illicit drugs, but living in the real world, we acknowledge some community members do use these substances and we believe it is better for people to be informed rather than ill-informed of what they're using.
So to start with, could you both perhaps share with us and our listener a little bit about yourselves before you started at VAC, such as where you've worked before and why you've chosen to work at VAC? Garth?
Okay, thanks, Jesse. I guess before working at VAC, I worked at an organisation in Canberra called the AIDS Action Council of the ACT.
I think that's when I met you, actually.
It was, actually. We met on a course. Yeah,
that was like 4 years ago.
It was, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was great. So prior to that, I guess being a HIV-positive man who'd had issues with substance use prior to that, I have always wanted to work in the LGBTI community service. So I went back to uni, did a psych degree and did a master's and did my placement at the AIDS Action Council. And then,
that's amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Can I just ask, when did you go back to uni? Like how...
I was like 38, I think. Yeah.
Very impressed.
Thanks.
Very, very impressed. It was hard enough for me to go back after 1 year off from my undergrad. So good on you, Garth.
Thank you. Yeah, it was good. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great. So, amazing. And it's led me to here. And I guess 2 years ago, I saw a job advertised working in alcohol and drugs at VAC. And it's an area I'm quite passionate about. So I applied and I'm lucky enough to be now working here.
Awesome. And yourself, Mark?
Yeah, well, I've been around the AOD sector for a while, so I've been in a number of different roles, but just prior to coming across to VAC, because I'm fairly new to the team, started late last year, I was working in the crisis homeless sector, but within a drug and alcohol team, prior to that, forensic court-based programs. So I've done that on and off for the last 7 years.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so my role within the drug and alcohol team is care and recovery. It's a bit of a different role to, I guess, how I sit within the team, but I work basically with clients who come with complex or multiple presentations. So generally I'm working with all of the harms associated with their, I guess, substance use. So we're looking at housing, homelessness, a lot of connection with the justice system, finances, maybe domestic violence, family violence, anything which is associated with the complexities around their substance use. I'm trying to get them connected and supported. Also people trying to get into, I guess, resi programs, residential programs, because there's quite a process to go there. I'm helping them get through those processes or basically navigate them through within their goals. So we do a lot of goal planning, matching the services, what their needs are.
Amazing. So can you potentially share with us a little about the alcohol and other drug area at VAC, what are the main areas of concern regarding AOD, or what we shorten alcohol and other drugs, and our client communities?
Sure. I think a really important point that was made earlier was about the idea of that it's better for our clients to be well-informed. So working at VAC, we come from a harm minimization approach, which, you know, effectively means that we are there to support the client, whatever their journey looks like. So some people might want abstinence, some people might want controlled use, some people want to reduce their use, and some people might want to be better informed around their use. So we will work with the client to better facilitate better health outcomes for them. So I guess that's really, really important to sort of state. So that's the area that we work from.
Yeah, and I think with the whole harm minimization thing, it's important to remember that whilst we don't condone it, we understand that it does happen and that we are really here to minimize the harms that the use or the misuse might cause, right?
Absolutely. And the behaviors associated with the use. So it's not just about perhaps your drug-taking behavior. It's all the behaviors that are associated with it. So mm-hmm. we kind of work from a holistic point of view. So we don't just treat the substance in isolation. We address the behavior change around that, but we look at things like perhaps your relationships, your family, work environment, living environments, you guess the greater community that you live in, the environment that you are part of.
Just life.
Life, yeah. Yeah. So it's all very much interconnected.
Yeah.
Now, I guess what we're really talking about here is addiction. Addiction mm-hmm. to a variety of substances, including alcohol and other drugs. So what is addiction? How is it defined? Perhaps why do people become addicted to varying substances? Is there something hardwired into our brains that people are predisposed to become addicted? Either of you or both of you are welcome to answer this.
Okay. I guess that's the million-dollar question. Mm-hmm. Why do people become addicted? I guess the jury's still out. So there's a few parts to that question. A lot of there's some research to suggest that there's a hereditary component to addiction. Other people dispute that. I mean, not everybody that comes from a family where substance use has happened will turn into a substance or misuser themselves. So around the hardwired, I'm not sure. And I don't, you know, people become addicted to substance for a variety of reasons. We see, you know, a lot of people through our services, they're trying to avoid pain. People in our community have generally had a pretty tough ride. We're dealing mm-hmm. with stigma, discrimination, internalized homophobia. Often we're isolated from our families. We are often early on, we might be evicted from our homes and things like that.
So I just would maybe ask both of you your opinion. I know one of the really famous harm reduction studies or case studies would be with Portugal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they did the big study on heroin users and how they managed to reduce the number of heroin users. And they found the overarching thing that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety,
mm-hmm.
it is human connection.
Yeah.
So I'd really like to know what you two think about that.
Well, I would agree with that. I mean, you know, part of our programs, and whether that be individual counselling, care and recovery, or our group work, is really sort of how to reconnect with community. Often people, when they use, they become isolated. Mm. So when people can re-engage with community, with their friends, with their family, that can give them such a strong sense of support. I mean, a family in
acceptance.
Our LGBT... acceptance. So, like, I mean, and it's important to define that family is often a chosen family within our community. So, you know, your family is not necessarily your birth association. It's who you choose that to be. Connecting, re-engaging, finding support within those communities is really, really important. Mm. And I guess that's how you can measure addiction. Going back to that first question is, what is addiction? So we kind of define it as, I guess, the impact that it's having upon your life. So some people can use substance and it be totally fine, great. When it sort of, I guess, when it starts to impact your ability perhaps to go to work, to pay your rent, to be able to buy food, to have meaningful relationships, I guess that's when you can probably identify that perhaps my substance use might be a little bit out of control, perhaps I need some help with it, and that might be a good time to access services such as VAC OAD services.
That's really interesting, yeah.
And we have to remember addiction is complex, so it doesn't look the same for two people. However, what we're seeing is a lot of people come with that disconnect. They don't have those connections, whether it's to community, whether it's to family or friends or other supports. So that's where we're seeing people who are coming commonly have that common thread around about the disconnect.
Absolutely.
Now, whilst we're here today to discuss one particular therapeutic group conducted by VAC, and that's the Rewired program, are there other groups or counselling areas for people affected by other substances, for example?
Absolutely. We run a variety of programs. So as we've mentioned, we have one-on-one counselling. We do care and recovery, which Mark is in control of. So maybe he wants to talk a little bit about what that is. But in terms of therapeutic groups, we run Rewired, as Tex mentioned. We do Drink Limits, which is for LBQ women who are experiencing issues with alcohol use and anxiety. We do Transformed, which is trans and gender diverse persons experiencing issues with substance use and probably anxiety or mental health conditions. We do Over the Limit, which is for MSN, or men who have sex with men, experiencing issues with alcohol. And we have a new program, which we're really excited about, which is for youth and for AOD clients. So we're calling it YATH, which is for youth alcohol and other drug support services. So mm-hmm. That's brand new. We're really excited about that.
And if anyone wanted to know more information about that, we'll chuck the links in. And you can always go look to the VAC website, which is vac.org.au.
This is Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. This evening, we're joined by our colleagues Garth and Mark from the Victorian AIDS Council's Alcohol and Other Drugs Services team here on Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. Now, before we chat about the Rewired program, perhaps we can chat about the higher rates of substance misuse within the communities that we work with and perhaps the reason for this misuse?
That's a great question. Within our broader communities, we sort of traditionally see much higher rates of substance misuse than the heterosexual generalist population. Some of the reasons for that are, you know, we talked about the idea of stigma, discrimination. Often there's... As I think members of the LGBTI community, often we carry a lot of internalized homophobia. So that's perhaps we've taken on the stigma and discrimination that perhaps family from school, you know, that they feel about members of that of our communities. And we take that on and we sort of internalize it.
Like feelings of shame.
Feelings of shame, absolutely. Yeah, mm. Yeah. And embarrassed for who we are. And that can transpire in terms of low self-esteem, not feeling that you're worthy perhaps of a relationship or a good job or whatever. So that can really impact upon that. So those things can really feed into why we use substances, so to feel better about ourselves.
And I imagine some of these feelings came in last year during the marriage equality debate when people were not necessarily being encouraged to be different from the norm.
Absolutely. And I think the idea of that whole equality debate was, you know, that we were being judged as a community. So it wasn't like our relationships were on the line. It wasn't like we were valid until we were acknowledged from a broader community. So it really did impact a lot of people, and it was really quite upsetting for a lot of people within our community.
I was going to say, did you actually see a connection between the marriage equality debate and the issues that kind of arose from that within people and substance misuse?
We did, yeah. And not, alongside that, we also saw an increase in kind of self-harm, which is really very distressing.
Absolutely.
And even though it mightn't have been a primary issue for presentation to the service, it was an underlying issue, and it sort of came up repeatedly within sessions, both in AOD and in the generalist counselling stream.
Yeah.
So,
So you were talking about earlier about feelings of shame and... a self-destructive behavior. I'm just curious to know, it might be quite difficult to answer, but like proportion of the clients that you see, how many of them are actually aware that they have they're self-destructive or that they're intentionally self-destructive? Are they quite kind of unaware, or do the clients you see actually are at the point where they realize they kind of need help?
It's a great question, and it's true. I mean, I think I don't think a lot of people have that insight yet. So, you know, the counselling process can be really, really enlightening around that. So you can understand perhaps your motivation behind substance use or risky behaviours and things like that. So we probably wouldn't term it in so much as self-destructive behaviour unless, you know, but it's like perhaps not self-supporting behaviour. And that's part of that process is understanding why I do that. So it can be very confronting.
Yeah.
Which I guess is the point of counselling in these group programs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we're a volunteer program, so people are actually taking that first step and they're coming to us. So people are seeing the impact of their substance use and they're saying, okay, I need to do something about this. So whether it's they see the full impact of it or whether it's that early steps that they're just trying to find out about
it. They have some awareness already coming to you, yeah.
Okay, now we have got you in the studio tonight to talk about the Rewired program. What's it all about? if someone says to you, or, you know, perhaps another service provider rings up and says, what's Rewired all about? I've heard it's about this, that and the other. What would you say to them, or what would you say to someone coming into the service who wants to know what it's all about?
Yeah. So I guess the Rewired program is pretty much a two-pronged approach to recovery. So maybe I'll talk about the therapeutic group, and then Mark can perhaps talk about the peer-led support group, Rewired 2.0. So Rewired therapeutic group is an 8-week therapeutic program. It's based on evidence. It's evidence-based, so meaning that, you know, it's quite structured. We draw a lot on CBT.
CBT for our listener. Break it down for us.
Yeah, cognitive behavior therapy. So, you know, looking at the interaction or the play between thought processes or cognitive processing and behavior. And so, you know, often, you know, if we can change our behavior, we can change our thinking. So we work around that. We look at motivational interviewing, so really kind of uncovering what is your motivation for change. And when someone can explore that and understand perhaps what their motivation is, it makes it, I guess, it's easier to sort of go down that track of recovery.
Is that a two-way street, the cognitive behavior therapy, or therapy or theory?
Therapy.
Therapy, how changing your behavior could change your thought process. Mm-hmm. What about, do you approach it, can your thought process change your behavior?
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. So a lot of people come to our group and they have, or our programs, and they have a lot of negative self-talk. So if we can sort of get you to address that negative self-talk, hear it, address it, then that can really impact. So if you're thinking, you know, I'm worthless, blah, 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 and that's not a very nice conversation to have with yourself. So I feel terrible about myself. So my behavior then is about, I want to feel better about myself. So I'm going to use substances to make myself feel better. Mm-hmm. But if we can change the process of like, well, I'm actually not that bad, I'm actually a good person, you know, I'm worthy. Yeah. That can really impact upon the way that you feel about yourself, then affect behavior. Does
Absolutely.
That make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally.
Now, Mark, I'd like you to talk later about Rewired 2.0. I just have a question now I'd like to ask you. Do facilitators, whether they're paid staff or they're volunteers, do they need to have been exposed to methamphetamines or to recreational drugs, illicit drugs, to understand what affected people are going through? Or is it something that they can learn, if you like, through theory?
I guess to be a facilitator, it takes a diverse range of skills. Mm-hmm. It's not to say whether you've had a substance use, you're going to be a good facilitator or a bad facilitator. You need to look at a number of things. However, we do see that facilitators who have maybe past patterns or problematic substance use or exposed to it tend to have a better connection or able to work better in that type of environment. But again, it comes down to the facilitators that we have basically. We go through a recruitment process, we have an interview process, so it's about finding the right person mm-hmm. to facilitate to that group. So in relation to our methamphetamine groups, our facilitators do come with a past methamphetamine use, and they're fairly open about that because that's part of our peer program. So with that one, I would say, look, it's beneficial, but it's not mm-hmm. mandatory.
Great.
Yeah, so ideally this whole peer-led is kind of from the GLBTI community and who have had experience of using amphetamines.
Yeah, so with our peer program, yeah, preferably all of those will have a connection to the community that they're working with in those programs.
Great. Well, we'll be back shortly. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. And we are joined by our colleagues Garth and Mark from Victorian AIDS Council Alcohol and Other Drug Services team. Before the break, we were speaking about facilitators. Now, could you share with us about how facilitator training is undertaken? And it would be good to hear from the both of you.
Well, in relation to, I guess, our Rewired 2.0 program, so all the facilitators who conduct that are trained in smart recovery. So smart recovery, again, is a cognitive behavior therapy style approach. And again, to get to that process, it's an interview, it's a selection process to get the facilitators to. They generally come with a background in working in drug and alcohol or related health fields. So at the moment, we've got someone who works in mental health and a dual diagnosis, so both mental health and drug and alcohol. And the other facilitator comes from the drug and alcohol sector. So they come with a lot of the skill set. However, if they need any skills as we go along, we do offer training.
Yeah. And with our therapeutic groups, they're generally run by our counselling staff or care and recovery staff as well. So most of those facilitators are trained. They have some kind of degree or whatever. So they're very used to working with therapeutic modalities, so different Great. Types of counselling practices.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'd like to ask you about the different names that we use for the drug that we're talking about when we're talking about this Rewired group. or group process. For example, some people will know crystal methamphetamine, which is such a mouthful, by an easy name like Tina or meth. Now, they're common terms that people use in the community, but I understand that some terms like that can be a trigger to some people. Garth, perhaps you could tell us what the word trigger means in this instance.
Yeah, sure. It's really, really important to understand what your triggers are when you're sort of engaging on this or starting on this recovery journey. So for me, a trigger is kind of like an initiator or a start. It can spark something. So like you're right, a word might be a trigger. So when I hear the word trigger or when I hear the word like meth or eyes or Tina, perhaps that starts a reaction in me. So I'm having a response to a word or a stimulus. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that might think, oh, I hear that word, that makes me want to use. So then that can start a chain of events happening. So the better we can understand the triggers, the more we can take the sting out of them, and you can actually build resilience around that trigger and move through it. So, yeah.
And because sometimes they're not very obvious triggers, right?
Well, trigger can be anything. It can be a sight, a sound, a smell. It might be Friday afternoon. It might be, I don't know, FOMO, your fear of missing out. Other people are doing stuff. I got nothing going on, you know.
Yeah.
It can be absolutely anything. And we see that, don't we, Mark? You know, the variety of triggers that we engage in groups are pretty varied.
And the framework that we work in, we try to get people to stop thinking of the substance but start thinking of behaviour. So in all our groups, we get people to try and refrain from talking about the drug, i.e. meth, ice, etc., and it's about the substance. And then we want to start to do that behaviour change, because we know once we start to take the substance away, we're starting to take that thought pattern out of the brain, focus on the behaviour, and that's when we're going to start to see change.
Mm.
Perhaps this would be a good time to ask you to take us through the process of the rewired group. Is it possible to describe such a thing? Like, is there a typical process that makes the journey of the how the group dynamics work?
Yeah, with the therapeutic group, as I said, it's evidence-based, so it's actually really quite structured. So it's an eight-week program, as we mentioned before, and each week we address different issues along that journey. So like in week one is very much kind of coming together and we all get to know each other. It's pretty anxiety provoking for most people and mm-hmm. for us as well, meeting new people. And then we start, like by then we start working on identifying your triggers, developing a relapse prevention plan. And we look at things like the relationship between sex, meth and intimacy, which is a really big trigger and a really big issue for most men coming through the program. And then things like, you know, re-engaging with community. What does that look like? What does that mean for me? Exploring your recovery capital, meaning things like, you know, what tools can I use going forward to help me through this process?
Recovery capital, I like it.
Yeah.
And so how important is it that all of the men who start the group together finish together? Is that kind of built in, or do you think it's important to kind of do it together, or what do you reckon?
Well, it's a type of group that come along, and if it's not for you at that stage, by all means, we encourage people, you can come back and do it at a later stage. So it's a program that we want people to come to, feel it's a safe space, but you start to see a bond start to form within the group, and we encourage people to stick it out. Mm. However, we're mindful of not everyone's journey is the same. So if you need to come back and do it again, that there's always that opportunity there. But it's a type of thing that you do as a group. You get that sense
support
of a bond.
Support each other. Yeah. Totally. Well, we'll be right back. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
And this evening we're joined by Mark and Garth from the VAC Alcohol and Other Drug Services team. Now, I'd like to ask you a question. Are there any issues that come up every time during the group process, the rewired group, or is it each group just comes across as an individual group, unique, you know, with different issues? Mm. Or is there stuff which is just, you know, it's going to come up?
Yes and yes.
Right.
So, it doesn't help. So yes, there are. Each group is really individual. It's really made up of you know, 12 different men, all with a different journey. But having said that, there are, I guess, there are themes and there are current conversations that we have. Things like isolation, loneliness. I mean, the relationship between meth, sex, and meth and intimacy is constant, wouldn't you say, Mark?
Yes.
Definitely. And that's something that we have had to, working on the health promotion team, is something that we've had to address as well. And obviously a lot of the work that we've done together in the ICE campaign and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, the ICE use, sex, and intimacy really is something that is a big deal.
It's huge. It's hard to break that connection between the two. And that is a huge trigger and a huge issue going forward for a lot of men. We also see a lot of things about shame and stigma, that internalized shame and stigma, and like, people, my family is sick of me, my friends are sick of me, I'm really isolated and I don't know who to turn to anymore. So often we're seeing guys kind of at the the end. Well, not the end, but they've hit rock bottom, so to speak. So, yeah.
Yeah, especially if they're coming to you for this program. It's not like you've gone to recruit them or anything per se, right?
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned stigma, and there is stigma attached to drug use. So privacy must be a big concern for the people who come along, the participants in the group. What are some of the ways that you look after the privacy of clients and group participants, you know, to keep them feeling safe?
And I guess that's what someone who comes to the group for the first time, they're really apprehensive about going into that space, about knowing other people, about who's going to find out that I'm here, who's going to see me, all those type of things. So privacy is our number one, I guess, importance when it comes to our framework that we work in. So obviously, at the start of a group, we have a group agreement, and that is developed by the group. So they go through that. We ask the group to formulate, okay, what is it that everybody who's attending this course for the next 8 weeks agrees to? And again, privacy and confidentiality is the main one, which always comes up. And then we get the group to explore what that looks like for them. So for them, we also make sure it's in all forms of communication. So about, you know, it's not only that when you're in the group, when you leave the group, but if you're online or other ways that you communicate, that you have to continue the privacy across to that. People are sometimes maybe concerned, but we let them know that VAC in relation to privacy is that we have tight legislation requirements that we do not share the information with anyone else within VAC. The information just stays with the program. We don't share it with other staff. So the most is done to, I guess, maintain a person's integrity and privacy.
Yeah, great. So I believe that you mentioned earlier, Garth, that there's a group called Rewired 2.0, and it is a separate group from the
Rewired Therapeutic Group.
Yeah. Like, could you kind of explore that a little bit and what the difference is between the two?
Yeah, so I might give you a bit of just a general background about the two groups. Then Mark might talk more specifically about what it is, because he used to be a facilitator, but also is the overseer of that group now. So when we first started doing the Rewired Therapeutic Group, we were having really great results with people coming through the program. But at the end of it was a six-week program then. At the end of that, people started lapsing and relapsing, and they identified that they felt quite lost and alone and didn't feel that they had the ongoing support that they needed. So there were some wonderful people who were involved in that development, and so we collaborated with Smart Recovery and came up with Rewired 2.0. So it's an ongoing peer support group based on a Smart Recovery program. Unlike the therapeutic group, it's ongoing, fortnightly. Mark, you might want to talk about what happens in that group.
So our Rewired 2.0 group, that's been running for 3 years now. It's a peer-led program, so facilitators in there have all come from a background of past methamphetamine use. We meet fortnightly. It's every second Tuesday, but again, like Garth said, it uses CBT, cognitive behavior therapy, which is a SMART model. So what it does, it looks at behavior change, and again, people come there, generally they will leave, they'll have a goal that they go away with that helps maintain their motivation. And when they come back, we do a check-in, see how they've been going. We look for triggers, lapse, relapse, those type of things. And then the group work on it. So the group will actually go, oh, this happened to me in the past. I tried this, this, and this. So they basically learn from each other. The facilitators are just there to basically facilitate that. And the group basically does all the work.
But it's different in terms of, it's not like this just 12 men, it's kind of whoever is going through that journey.
This is a drop-in, drop-out program, so it's basically aftercare. So people who want to come along can come along for 1, 2, 3 sessions, and might come along for 6 months, and then hopefully they don't need the group anymore because they've gone off and the recovery model's going along. Or if they want that ongoing, they can keep coming each fortnight. This one is basically their post-care.
Yeah. Ongoing support.
Do you want to explain what SMART actually stands for?
Stands for Self-Manage and Recovery Training.
Self-Manage and Recovery Training.
Yeah.
And it looks at this like four domains. So it basically focuses on, okay, how do you maintain that motivation, your lapse and your triggers? And it's also about having, I guess, connection to community around about the stages to support people.
I imagine feedback from participants, past or present, could be quite good for you, because it makes you feel good. What are some of the, I mean, de-identified, of course, but what are the general, some of the general comments or things that people say that keep on coming up?
It's always nice to hear positive feedback, but, you know, negative or constructive criticism is really, really valued. That's how we have evolved and developed the program. Mm-hmm. So like quite recently, a lot of the comments were that the program wasn't long enough, so we extended it. And the participants identified that, you know, that they wanted to spend more time working on things like intimacy and the relationship between their meth use and sex. So we really added a component in around that. And also app use. How does that factor into this whole recovery journey? And myself as an MSN using meth and sex and, you know, the availability of things. But generally, the feedback is pretty positive, wouldn't you say, Mark? I mean, most people say that they get a lot out of the group. I mean, a group is unbelievably great in the way it can regulate itself, the way that men can learn from each other. There's, you know, it's nothing better than sitting in a group of men who have similar experiences to you, who can talk openly and freely about their similar experiences or the differences and how they can help. It's pretty amazing, wouldn't you say, Mark?
And you'll often hear, oh, I'm not the only one. Oh, there's other people going through this. So it gives that space to realise you're not the only one, but, oh, it's also affecting other people like this.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Great. Well, we'll be right back. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. We were joined by Mark and Garth from our VAC AOD Services team, and we finally have to draw to a close. Now, if someone is interested in engaging with the service, what are some of the first steps that they could take?
I guess the first step is they can pick up the phone and call VAC on 9865 6700 and our staff there will direct them to the AOD team.
Yeah, so they can either ask for Mark or myself, Garth, or Claire, our intake and assessment officer, who's wonderful and we can best direct you in the way to going forward.
What should someone expect when they start to engage with the alcohol and other drugs service?
So I think, you know, engaging any kind of service can be really challenging. So we try to make the process as smooth and as seamless and as free of anxiety as possible. So, you know, we ask questions about how we can make you feel comfortable. We are aware of the anxiety that's happening. So we try to make, you know, we don't want you to tell your story repeatedly. So I guess, you know, I think it's a great service. So we're building rapport. We are treating you with empathy and respect and dignity, and we're affirming your identity. So, you know, that's really, really, really important to us.
Yeah, and really understanding where the client's coming from and just understanding that their journey is individual and can be really difficult, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So if someone did call up and perhaps the Rewired program wasn't going to start again for another 8 weeks or just it was in the middle of a cycle or something, what could they do in the meantime, or how would that kind of look for them?
So we've just kicked off our first group for the year, so that was last Thursday, so we don't have another group now for 8 weeks, and we already have people on that wait list there. So what we encourage people is to contact us, and we can basically discuss their treatment needs, their options, what's out there, and help them support through navigating, I guess, whether it's doctors, whether they can go to access other services, whether they need some telephone supports, whether VAC can provide a number of other programs, whether we can link them in. So it's about, I guess, connecting them and get the process starting.
Yes, yeah, so I'm assuming that even if they can't get into the group straight away, you do help engage them with like a whole treatment plan, don't you? And kind of go through all the steps so they're not kind of on their own.
Absolutely. A part of that process of engaging with our service, whether it be for groups, one-on-one or CRC, is that we do an assessment. So in that process, we can really identify how we can best help you and best address your issues. So, yeah, and we will work with you continuously.
Now, there's someone listening right now on the radio, or perhaps they're listening to the podcast of this show, and they're concerned about their use, their drug use, perhaps their meth use. Or maybe they're concerned about their best friend or a good mate or a family member, their mum, their dad, their sister, their uncle. What steps should they take? Can someone report for someone else, or do people need to report in themselves? You know, how does that process work?
So we're all about self-referral. So, you know, the client needs to refer themselves into the service. Having said that, though, we do get a lot of calls from concerned loved ones, and we welcome that because often that conversation that a loved one might have, or a significant other with their partner or whomever, about, you know, just asking the question, are you okay? I've noticed perhaps you're missing a lot of work. Are you okay? I've noticed you're really tired. Can start a conversation perhaps around about what's going on for them. So if you're armed with information about the services that we provide, you can offer them an alternative. So it can actually be the first step, and it can be really, liberating for someone not to have to. It can be really confusing when you're in that sort of active addiction stage. Everything is confusing. Your mind's not working great. So if you can help somebody perhaps see a way out of that whirlwind, it can be really, really beneficial. And we also, part of the YAS service that I mentioned before, can now offer family support going forward. So, you know, that might be just a couple of sessions, information giving and things like that.
And again, we also have Direct Line, which is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week service. So if anyone, so this is for everyone, whether it's a person who's using substance or whether those who are affected by substance, can pick the phone up and have a talk to someone. They can also help steer them in the right direction or link them in with other treatment and supports. And they also offer online services at www.directline.org.au.
And what's the phone number for Direct Line?
It's 1-800-888-236.
We'll put that information on our webpage. We'll put that information so that people can see this when they're checking out the podcast.
Right, and we finally have to draw to a close, which is a shame because I was enjoying our conversation so much. Mark and Garth, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here in the studio with us, imparting your words of wisdom. thank you so much, Garth. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. My name is Jessie and my co-host, Tex.
This is Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. And we do need to thank our guests tonight, Garth and Mark. They were, of course, from the VAC, Victorian AIDS Council's Alcohol and Other Drugs team. And we've been chatting about the Rewired groups available at VAC. Now, you can check out VAC and the Rewired group simply by going to the VAC website, vac.org.au. There's a little search engine feature there and you can just type in counselling or you could type in Rewired and that will take you directly through to either counselling or the Rewired program. Or you can type in LGBT health, whatever you like to type in. There is a drop-down menu, but sometimes it's easier just to use the search function. You can hear past episodes of our show by going to the podcast page on the Joy website, that's joy.org.au, and you can hear some of the episodes that we've done in the past about a whole different variety of issues. We will have more of Well, Well, Well next week. Please feel welcome to tune in then. This is Tex saying goodbye and Jessie saying
goodbye, everyone. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Bye-de-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.